it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. Hi, I'm Dr. Lisa. I give a shit. I give a shit. You know what's awesome? This is so, I love the debates. I know, like, that's probably, like, I don't know if that's, I don't give a fuck what you think about me, all right? I just love them, and I'll tell you why. I love them for the entertainment value. I kind of wish it was a reality show, but in a parallel universe, not part of my life. But isn't it crazy?
No, no, you're the puppet. No, you're the puppet. I want to be the puppet.
Anyway, I think it's hilarious. So that's what we're all thinking about right now. I'm trying to get into your consciousness a little bit there. Because we have a very special guest on today. We have artist David Kramer, and David and I made a big push to get you guys to listen. So shout out to LMAK, Bart, shout out to Bart. But before we get started, I got to tell you about this. I got to tell you what's going on at the station, which is so amazing. It's not even what's going on in the station. It's going on with the entire building, because we used to be in the basement of a bike shop, and now we are still in the basement of the same building. We are taking the whole building over, and we also have a record store. This record store is incredible. It's called Secondhand Records, and brand new, and you can see it from, you know, it's the storefront, and they have every kind of records, new and old, 45s, LPs, and 12-inch singles at, you know, our local crazy low Bushwick prices, and all sorts of vinyl dance hits. If you can dance to it, we sell it. So, or actually, Secondhand Records sells it. Because, I mean, on paper, it's two separate businesses, just so you don't get confused. Or it's just so I don't get confused. Okay, enough about that. Let's get to our guest, David Kramer. Hello, David.
Hi, Lisa.
How are you today? You're nervous, right?
Yeah, sure.
Are you? Are you really nervous?
Well, it's funny because I...
Here, will you plug into your phone again? Because it already went down. I can't find the information. Because I want to tell everybody about your exhibition that's opening tomorrow night, Friday night. And the opening is from 6 to 9. David will be there. I will be there. And everyone who's anyone will be there. And it's at the LMAK Gallery, which is in the Lower East Side of Manhattan at 298 Grand Street. Let's see, what else can I tell you about it? It's going to be a really great show. I went and I saw it yesterday. I got a private that was a private preview, right?
That's right.
I met the with the gallerist, David, and he showed me the exhibition, which is really amazing.
Well, thanks.
And we knew David was going to come in today, so we wanted to get prepared. I needed to know what we were talking about here. We'll talk about that in a minute. But first of all, if you know me or David at all, you know that we have hosted many things together, right, David?
Yeah, we're like a team.
We are like a team. We are like a team, like a really dysfunctional team, right?
Right.
Like, I sort of get a taste of what your wife Susan goes through. I think maybe a little bit, maybe not quite, because
right.
You have she's your. She really knows. I got to get some more tips from her. But anyway, and I also know your son, who's my hero. He's going to be performing. Let's make this all about Martin. That's what I was thinking.
Oh, that makes it easy. And then I'm not nervous.
Then you're not nervous. Because Martin, David's son, has also been on this show, and he's also interned for me on this show, is a budding comedian. And is he 16 now?
Yeah. He's doing a show himself on Sunday at Gotham
Comedy Club.
In the
Kids
afternoon.
For Comedy. And it's at 1:30? I have it on my calendar.
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock. I'm going to be there.
23rd Street.
I've gone to see Kramer's kid, Martin, a bunch of times. He's been doing comedy, seriously, since he's 13 years old. And there is nothing quite like, if you like comedy at all, there is nothing like watching kids take doing comedy seriously and have a practice skill at it. It's craziness, right, David? Well, you're used to it by now, right?
He's got a certain discomfort level that makes that in his delivery that is pretty great. It's irresistible.
Yeah, he's a little bit of an evolution of you, right?
Yeah.
We got to say that, right?
He inherited the my DNA of being uncomfortable in his own skin.
Right, without having the great parenting of you and Susan.
That's
who
right.
encourage him in every way creatively.
Uh-huh.
And also growing up in New York. David and I are very jealous of his son, right?
That's right.
We are. We're envious of him. Yeah. Anyway, I'm just trying to talk about Martin to diffuse your anxiety. Here's the thing. Okay, I don't really know how David feels right now, but I just want you to know what my experience of working with David is. The very, very beginning stage of it now. It probably won't last very long, but the very beginning stage of working with David is, like, usually we're, like, say, hosting a benefit thing. And, I'll make all the arrangements because... You know, I'm the people, you know, I do that, whatever. I'm the organizer.
You're the alpha.
I don't know, David. You're like kind of the stealth.
I'm the beta.
You're the manipulator. You're the manipulator behind the scenes.
That's right.
I'm working for you, but it looks like you're working for me. Maybe.
That's sort of
I'm
how,
not sure.
Yeah.
So David's agreed to do it. And then when it comes time to get up in front of, like, you know, a room full of people that we know, like a large room full of people that we know, artists who, are there for another, you know, not just to see us. And we've got a job to do. And then David gets, like, ridiculously nervous. Ridiculously. And I'm like, I don't understand how you can. He's great on stage. I don't understand how you can be nervous. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what the worst was? The wine tasting.
Yeah.
That was insane.
That was the worst. That we had I had built a wine bar and we did a wine tasting and
W-H-I-N-E, but real wine.
Yeah.
That was David's idea of it. It was David's thing that we were doing together.
It was a fun show. We did it
Catherine Mulheron,
and we had I had gotten a couple of cases about 4 or 5 cases of cheap Trader Joe wine and made my own labels and just stuck them right on top of the on their wine, and we had a whole wine tasting around these Trader Joe two-buck chuck.
The part? I mean, you know what, David? Right now I'm thinking about all the times that you alone have done stuff where I've been there or that we've done stuff together, and to tell you the truth, the level of anxiety that I've witnessed from you is just going through my head, and it's all... You know what the worst was when you did... Didn't you do something when Larry Walczak and I hosted a show... Anyway, I just want to tell you something. I have worked with all sorts of performers, you know, and David, who is very talented, just has a level of anxiety as if he was going to be the star of a Shakespearean show at the Public Theater.
I had a really bad traumatic experience in high school doing our high school play.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
We had done Deliverance. That was the show.
That's so dark. What kind of fucking high school was that?
No, I'm just joking.
Oh, you're joking. See, that's why he's nervous. But anyway, David, so how do you feel now? Are you nervous? I don't think you're that nervous.
I'm loosening up, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Where's that anxiety come from, David? You're now on my psychotherapy show,
yeah.
So I'm gonna drill it
now
down.
I'm on the couch.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't particularly enjoy being looked at.
Well, you're not. I'm not even looking at you. You know that.
I know. It's good to be on the radio. That
is helps. The radio easier?
Yeah, it helps a little
bit. What happens when... Is it just... Do you think it's like a biological type of self-consciousness?
But
part of it you love. Come on.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I love every minute of the anxiety. But I had a... As a kid, I was, I'm totally dyslexic. I couldn't read. And so whenever I was called upon in school, I always made horrendous mistakes, you know, misreading everything. And I didn't take it well. But I seemed to perform well under this kind of, because I was always sort of a class clownish kind of guy. People like enjoyed the my mistakes. So,
yes.
I roll with it. So,
but, yes. Yeah.
But maybe that's why. I've been traumatized.
You have been traumatized. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
That's why I like being an artist. It's nice because you can put all your work up on the walls and walk away and have people not really look at you, but look at the walls. That's kind of a comforting way, yeah. As opposed to being a performer.
Well, it's funny. I mean, I do see kind of a thread between you and Martin. It's like mm-hmm. you have this kind of love-hate relationship with being the star, really. Mm.
No,
right?
He has no problem with being the star. He's very comfortable with a microphone in his hand. He's just not comfortable answering the telephone.
Well, you were saying he has, you mean the uncomfortableness is all character?
Yeah, I think so.
He is really, he is like really amazingly confident, isn't he?
I think he's pretty comfortable with the whole.
But then he seems like he's not.
Yeah,
like when you talk to him, but you know underneath that he
is.
Well,
if you talk to him, you know, he doesn't make eye contact, so it's hard to tell how comfortable.
That's true. Have you ever spoken to him like, Martin, how come you don't make eye contact? Or are you just letting him go on whatever?
Well,
like
no, he's getting better about that.
Do you put pressure on him to make eye contact?
No.
You know, okay.
I just tease him.
You know
him.
He's like a teenager.
Yeah, I just
that's normal.
I just tease him. I don't.
Okay.
There's no pressure. Just
Let you try to make him aware of it with letting him still be who he is.
Yeah, sure.
Oh Jesus! See, I'm so jealous. He's got like sensitive parents. He's so fucked up.
I know we're robbing him of like a entire
trauma.
Volumes of good comedy. If only like his He had a worse upbringing. He would have so much material.
So, do you like the idea of that we're both like sort of this is like group therapy where you would be like we're both deflecting talking about you and your
I like
yeah.
it a lot.
Do you?
Let's not even talk about anything else about me. Let's just talk about
let's talk about the show.
Okay.
Here's what happened yesterday, and I'm going to like try to replay it just a little bit so that we can start from there. So I went over there 11:45 before my in the Lower East Side before my eye doctor appointment, and I experienced the show, which is an experience. It's not just like it's an environment, an installation. It's not just like looking at paintings on a gallery by any means.
Well, I mean, let me just say that the gallery, LMAC, has the whole building, and the top floor of the building is really not gallery space. I think eventually it's going to be an apartment for the people that run the gallery, Bart and his wife, Luki. But they decided that they were going to do some projects in there. Three, and I'm the third of the project. So it's a really unusual space. It looks size-wise more like an apartment than an art gallery. So,
And it has the vibe of an apartment.
Yeah.
But anyway, when I was there yesterday, we were looking at the work, and for the purposes of this radio show, it's kind of like. I want to drill down into like your feelings about having the show and your feelings about making the work and stuff that you know what? Here's the deal. Just go to the Facebook page that I made and look at the work. If you want to look at the work and have a bigger understanding of it, and then I can just harass David with trying to screw around in his psyche. What do you say, guys?
It's like talking about food on the radio. Like,
yeah, it is a little bit.
You're kind of deprived of smell and taste and sight, but we're going to talk about it anyway.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you my reactions to you, David, to your reaction, to your feelings about how I see you, how I feel about how you feel about the show, okay?
Well, let me just say one thing.
Yes.
That is, just for anyone, listen, I decided when Bart and I were talking, he knew that I had done a lot of installation work, built furniture and light fixtures, things like that always were parts of my work when I would do an installation of any kind, paintings or drawings on the wall. There would always be these furniture pieces. And when I went up there and saw the space with him, we first talked about it, I immediately was like, well, this is going to be a pied-à-terre. This will be like my, you know, like I'm going to pretend like this is my apartment that I'm going to outfit. And that was sort of the way I initiated the project. That's how it got started.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of took a left turn or a right turn at some point. It didn't turn out to be like my apartment, but my dream apartment. But it did kind of take on. That was sort of where it gets. That was the launch of the whole project. So,
well, the thing that's sort of interesting about it is that it really is kind of is a character study a good word, or is that it's kind of like you invented a character that has made all the work. Is that a good way to put it?
Well, in the process of making, sort of outfitting this with stuff that I would like to have in this apartment, I made a video that is about, which is like, I play the protagonist. I'm the only person in the video. It's about me, but really, I hide behind the character in the video. Once you turn on the camera, I am not David Kramer, I'm Dave. And so, yes, the apartment turned into Dave's apartment, basically.
Right, which is obviously an extension of you. And I guess what was sort of interesting yesterday was that there was a certain, we keep using this buzzword, vulnerable, but the work seemed a lot more, let's say, emotional or less, it just seemed more vulnerable. I don't know. I wish I had a better word besides saying the V word over and over. Oh, the V word, that already leads us to something else.
Yeah.
Because Trump's running for president. And I'm actually wearing this T-shirt, shout out Spencer, that says, what does my T-shirt say, David?
I can't read it. Oh, it says something about, there's a picture of a
kitty cat on it. Oh,
don't
grab my pussy.
It's my pussy.
It's
too much machinery in front of you.
It's arm. Don't grab my, thank you, Spencer. But so anyway, so it's really funny because it seems to me, David, that by sort of, I'm going to use the word hiding behind this character, you were able to make your expression, both in the video, in the whole kit and caboodle of it, the video, the installation, the actual.
Well, there's the thing. Like when I started to sort of outfit this apartment with stuff, like I wanted to have this sort of, I built like a wood stove and which actually never made it into the show.
Yeah, you
and,
made a lot of work and that is not in the show.
And I made this like stone wall.
You worked
wall.
Really hard on it. Yes.
And then I wanted to have like this, I wanted to have like a tiger skin rug that would be in front of the fireplace. And I didn't want to just go out and buy a tiger skin rug. I felt like I should make it. I wanted to make everything that was in the room. So I started to figure out, like at first I thought maybe I would make the rug out of sand and just do it, you know, on port. Somehow I decided poured sand. And then I decided that I would just, that was one idea. And then I decided to do it, make hook rugs. Like I thought maybe I could just make a rug. I thought I'd seen hook rugs around in like my aunt's house. I kind of knew what that process looked like. So I decided I would make a hook rug, and I just watched a couple of YouTube videos on how to do it and bought some burlap and some yarn from Michaels and just went to town making this tiger skin rug. And that kind of got me, well, kind of like into it, like hooked into this whole thing. So I started making all these hook rugs. And then when I made a video, it was kind of like this sort of Bob Ross Joy of Painting, like how to YouTube video on how to make hook rugs. But that really sort of turned into this very, I think, dark and funny kind of like video. The problem with these YouTube videos on how to do anything is that,
which you said you watch a bunch of,
I
right?
watch them all the time, like how to, like, you know, do something on my computer. There's never, there's this sort of blandness to them and there's no humor to them, but they're kind of funny in a way because someone sincerely is making a video trying to help strangers learn what they know. And so I kind of like decided to make a video that was kind of like that, but it was like, here's the guy explaining to you how to make a hook rug, but here's there are things about him that he's going to tell you that you probably shouldn't know. And so
personal things,
and that's sort of where that's sort of why the whole installation became this sort of darker and more funny kind of installation, because once that video kind of materialized, then the whole show just sort of took this whole giant left turn, and then it became vulnerable.
Well also, there's also, from talking to you about it during the, we talk regularly, we see each other. I would say that you felt connected to this work in a pretty meaningful way, and that you felt like it had really pushed your
I got really into making hook rugs.
Yeah, but you also felt like it pushed your work into a new level, right? You had said that.
Well,
you seem really enthusiastic about that, which is what every artist wants to be doing.
Yeah, I got into a different place. Like, I left behind. There is no, like, drawings. There are no drawings and no paintings in this show. And that is essentially, like, when I first, you know, that is really where I started as an artist, really, was making drawings. Well, where I started was making drawings and sculptures and sometimes paintings. And I had gotten into this place where I was just making drawings and paintings and then having some objects or installation elements. This show is completely installation elements and video. And it was dispensed with text, which is something I have been doing a lot of.
I know, there's no text in it.
Dispensed with imagery, except for the tigers.
Well, what's really powerful is the aesthetic, which is yours, which is something you really have created and owned throughout all your work. And it's kind of interesting how strong it is without having any of your usual tools.
Right.
Thank you.
I know the other thing I have to say, though, is that's funny.
This is my show, David. I'll tell you when you can talk. Okay.
Go ahead. But the only thing that is funny is that I had not gotten bored, or I just sort of had been making a lot of drawings that were, I had gotten to a point where I knew how to make what I was making, and that was really, that became exciting, and then that became no longer exciting. And so I was really in this very big kind of conundrum about a year ago, trying to figure out how to sort of wrestle with my work to take it to another place. And at the same time, like, I didn't have a venue, a place to do a show. And so that's like a really tricky business in the art world, is to sort of like try to reinvent yourself when you don't have someone to sort of,
especially if you're a really good artist with a legitimate career like you, David. Yes.
Yeah. So I was rolling the dice pretty hard, and when Bart,
which is great,
approached me and asked me to do this, suggested that I do something with the room, with the rooms upstairs, I said yes, and then things started to kind of, like, fall together.
Well, you know how I see it, David, in a way? It's like, I think that you're always open to stuff like that. Like, you're always looking to push your work and push everything, and you're open to, like, opportunities to show and stuff like that. And I think that, like, if you're open to those things a lot, like, this was just kind of a really perfect confluence of circumstances and events that led you to making something, like, pretty fabulous.
Oh, thanks. But, you know, my work has always been about sort of vulnerability or self-deprecation.
Yeah, and, you know, I keep thinking about what's really interesting about, can we call this character, can I just talk about him like Dave?
Dave, yes.
Because Dave is different than you, but he's part of you. But here's the thing about Dave that I'm thinking about now that kind of occurred to me. I think in the work that you do, and I understand that to some degree, because I like my self-deprecation too. It's fun.
Yeah, you're good at it too.
Well, no, but I mean, it's a defense, and it's also a way to be intimate with people and be defense at the same time.
Right.
So, I think that there's sort of like, if it was real, if Dave, there's something. I think you're dealing with expressing yourself and not trying to make people feel sorry for you. Is there anything in that? Does that make any sense?
Well, yeah. I mean, I never, this is the other thing. Like, I've made a lot of videos over the years. And then in the last, like, 5 years, I've sort of stopped making my own videos. I was just making videos with a friend of mine, my friend Doug Magnuson. And he was the one who edited this with me and shot it. But it was like my script and everything. Anyway, the long and short of it is that, like, the videos were always informative to the self-deprecating work because I always was comfortable with being myself in these videos as not myself. It was a character that I was playing. So I was able to step outside. And that's really what I did with this character in this video. It's anything I said, there was really nothing to link it to reality except it's still me without a costume on, basically, saying, acting in front of a camera. So it is, the only costume really is the camera.
Right. But what I'm trying to, what I'm saying is, what I'm trying to get to, David,
yes,
is that I think that you wind up, there's something kind of funny in that you wind up feeling sorry. Let's not use the word vulnerable anymore. Let's just, or not use it, but let's just go there and say, in all honesty, the Dave character sort of pathetic.
Yeah, well,
he's not just vulnerable. He's like pathetic,
yeah.
And he's the kind of person that you know, you feel sorry for him, sort of. Yeah, you feel sorry for him because he wanted, this is my feeling about Dave. Dave wanted a lifestyle so badly that he couldn't have and doesn't really exist that he just kind of wound up living in his own lonely, sad world. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and he built all his own furniture.
Well,
no, but
fantasy, Dave, you know, bought all that.
Yeah. No, but the idea really is behind the videos that I have made in the past and this one. Only this one is different because there's really this Dave as opposed to me. But
yeah.
But, you know, there is always this idea about this idea that, listen, I became an artist, and like it's sort of like that sort of American dream kind of thing. Like, okay, I'm going to be an artist, and I'm going to work really hard, and then it's all going to work out, and I'm going to suddenly get out of my financial disaster of life because it will all finally stack up and turn into a glorious art career, which never, you know, it's like I'm always waiting for the rocket ship to launch. That's the joke.
Yeah,
in this video, like my thinking was when I was making it was, I am now no longer trying to be an artist. I'm trying to be a YouTube celebrity. I've already abandoned being
an artist. So funny.
So now I'm trying to be something else. Like, I'm trying to be, like, get my own YouTube channel. And so that, to me, was even more pathetic and more tragic than not making it as an artist. I've already abandoned being an artist. Now I'm making hook rugs.
So funny. It is. It's just so, I mean, it's great.
So
it's so good.
To me, that was really, I pushed into, like, no longer was this about the shattered American dream. Now it's like the dream is over a long time ago. And now it's like plan B, hook
plan
rugs.
Plan B, hook rugs. And like,
but, you know, I love the show. The video is called Hooking Up with Dave. And it sort of paints this idea that, like, you know, you're going to watch this thing. And it's about, I was, when I told people, advertise, you know, wrote on Facebook that I was having a show called Hooking Up with Dave, I had a couple of people say to me, so what is this about you, like, dating or something? This is like your new, like, secret life of dating and doing stuff. And it was, you know, I was like, no, this is a different kind of hooking up. This is like
literally hooking up.
This is just hooking up with a yarn and a hook. That's it.
Station ID.
Yeah.
Radio Free Brooklyn. Dr. Lisa talking with artist David Kramer about his show that's opening tomorrow at LMAK Gallery in the Lower East Side, 280 Grand Street, I think, right? 298. Thanks for getting that.
Between Allen and Eldridge Street.
There. So come and see it. It'll be open until how? It's open until, what's the closing? Like another month?
Yeah, it'll be open until December. It's open for 6 weeks. I don't have the date in front of me. But,
okay, 6 weeks.
Starts tomorrow, 6 to 9,
yeah.
And it's open through into December.
I'll put it on the Facebook page, mm-hmm. And you can see it. So anyway, so it's really funny because, so do you, I mean, So where did, I mean, it seems like you've always been sort of working with this idea of, you know, this imaginary life.
Right. Well, I mean, sort of, yeah. Like I said, like I've always made, when I was making videos in the past, when I was making drawings in the past, there was always like this first person singular way of writing on my paintings or drawings or with a typewriter. It's always a narrative about me, but I mean, it's really, I've always felt like the product of my product is always a distilled version of me. I've never taken it that seriously, that mm-hmm. I'm exposing myself. I've mm-hmm. always felt like I was hiding, like I said before about being kind of nervous and putting the art on the wall and walking away. I was always feeling like I was hiding a little bit, or I was sharing too much, but it was, or sharing too little mm-hmm. at my discretion in my mm-hmm. distilled way, because what I was saying was a fictionalized version of my own life. That mm-hmm. was really what it was. Mm-hmm. And Dave, the Dave character, is fictionalized version of my own life, but probably not that far
off. Well, your father was a lawyer, right?
That's right.
So, I mean, some of the expectations that you must have seen growing up probably didn't fit in with what your career goals were, right? There must have been some tension there, right?
There was, my father's expectations for my life fizzled sometime in high school.
Really disappointed in
he
you.
He was incredibly, no, my father passed away years ago, but
Before I've known you, right?
Yeah.
But no, how old were you when he died? Were you in your 20s? Were you growing up?
Yeah, I was 23 or 22. I was still a student in graduate school.
Oh, okay.
But, and he literally, he dropped dead on his way to work one day.
Okay.
And that was that. But
horrible.
But
so he wasn't sick. He was there the whole time. That wasn't part of it.
But he was like my, I'll just say that like my father was a guy who grew up in Brooklyn and was the son. He was the first person, the only person in his family to go to college. And he went to Wharton Business School and then he went to Harvard Law School. He was graduated like number two in his class from Lafayette High School. Like, incredibly, like, school was, like, easy for him.
And I picture him in a suit, right?
Yeah, Brooks
and
Brothers.
Maybe a little intimidating.
He was a very heavy, fat guy who smoked cigarettes and drank, you know, Scott bourbon all the time. He was, he thought...
An achiever.
...that I was supposed to, you know, he and my mother, who was also grew up in Brooklyn. She was not born there, but she grew up in Brooklyn. They... You know, moved to New Rochelle. They moved to the suburbs. They had a pretty, they worked really hard. They both had jobs. They worked really hard. My father had a law firm that he started. And his idea was that I was going to go to University of Pennsylvania, Harvard Law School, and take over his law firm. That was the plan. But I was a terrible student, and there was no chance of any of that
and
happening.
And did they, I mean, you're obviously, you know, it's this dyslexia. Were they just frustrated? Did they blame you? Did they? And I mean, I know also that, I mean, just to close the loop a little bit, that Martin also, your son had dyslexia, which you guys have worked out. And
now my son has the same issues that I had as a kid.
But you guys were able to understand that times have changed. You guys were really on top of it. And everything's really pretty great with him.
When I was
even though he had the same, must have been healing for you on some level to watch that, right? To be able to fix that for him, right?
It was. No, when I was in like the fourth grade, we went down to NYU, Rusk Institute. They had some tests done. The doctor came out. He says to my mother, you know, well, your son has dyslexia. He, you know, that's why he struggles in school. And so my mother said basically, well, you just try to do the best you can. That was, you know, I was plopped back into the elementary school and continued through school. And I, you know, I did terribly. And I was I had a whatever kind of attention deficit things mm-hmm. that my son had. Mm-hmm. And I just sat in class, never mm-hmm. really learning anything except mm-hmm. drawing in my notebooks. Mm-hmm. I just drew pictures all the time mm-hmm. and never paid attention.
Did your parents punish you or look down on you? Did you feel like there was criticism?
My father and mother never look down on me, so to speak, but I could always sense this horrific disappointment that my father had. And at one point, like when I went to college, I went to college and I studied. I went to George Washington University. I was going to study law. I thought about that for, and I was taking art classes and getting good, you know, really loving it.
How did you get to study law if you were like, did you figure out how to cope? Is that it?
I was undergraduate. I didn't go to law school, but I did like, you know, I was like taking economics and business classes.
So did you learn how to cope then? You must have, right?
I coped, but I was doing very badly in school.
Okay.
But my grades were horrific. And I was, at one point I realized that like I wanted that. If I had to spend the rest of my life doing something, I should do what I like to do, which was the art. So I basically, I was the beginning of the middle of my junior year, and I went back to school after Christmas. I saw my grades because they were mailed to me at school. And then I changed all my, I became an art major, and then I told my father, and he and I ceased to talk to each other for.
So he stopped talking to you?
For about a year or so, yeah.
Wow. Did you guys have a big fight or did you
we had an enormous fight, but because
were they paying for college?
He had always said to me that he was going to pay for college. That was like a big deal to him, and I said to him, "You don't have to pay, but I think you should." And he said, "I'm going to pay, but you're going to have to take the LSAT, and you're going to have to go to law school after you get out of after you get an undergraduate." And so I appeased him, said I would think about it, work on that. And then I graduated, and then we had another big fight. And I went to Pratt for graduate school. And I was lucky. He was successful. He was able to pay for me to go to school, but I paid everything else. He paid my tuition. I paid to be there.
So when he passed, where was your relationship?
It was actually a very funny thing because, first off, when it came down to we had a big argument when he asked me to take the LSAT, which I ended up taking, and he wanted me to apply to law school. And I said, "Listen, I don't want to go to law school." And he said to me, "You can go to any shitty law school in the country and you can still come and work in my law firm." And that, to me, sounded so horrible. I just said to him, "Did you hear what you just said? You went to Harvard. You want me to go to any shitty law school?" It sounded like a total, it was so pathetic. So he stepped back. And then I was, you know, this is a funny thing. This is a very funny story. It's not funny, but it's very coincidental. But my father, I went to Pratt. I was there for 2 years for graduate school. The first year, I got a job working for an artist, this woman, and then we worked for her. And then in the fall of that year, she had a show. And my father had started to soften about things. And on Halloween night of that year, my second year at Pratt, she had an opening in a gallery in the East Village, and he came to it, and she told him what an amazing assistant, great artist I was going to be, blah, blah, blah. And my father sounded legitimately impressed. And then on election day, 5 days later, he died. And so I guess he was proud of me at that point. I don't know.
So, I guess it's so something that you have to hold on to. But that must have just been awful.
It was awful.
Okay, so we're going to change it. Let's do station ID because I feel bad. I feel like it's upsetting.
Yeah.
Look at this. Look at what I did here. Oh, my God. Okay, so anyway, you're with Radio Free Brooklyn, and I'm talking to David Kramer about his show coming up at LMAK. It's funny, David, because it's a kind of shit that, you know, society, it's something that we all deal with, which is society. And I think a lot of artists have this, like society's expectations of what you're supposed to do.
Right.
And I think that, you know, I mean, as far as your dad goes, he was just worried about you earning money and shit like that.
Well, it's funny because I have two sisters and my father never asked them to be lawyers. And they both, I think, felt absolutely angry at that trauma.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
So what you just said, really, you can talk to them on your show next time. But
so you think...
I can't speak for them, but
did they do well in school? I was going to ask
you
about them.
My older sister is, you know, she's a scientist. She's really was a great student. She was, came easy. She's very...
She didn't have dyslexia, basically.
She's smart. She's great. My younger sister... you know, she I think she also had some dyslexic problems, but she was not into school in the same way. But school was easy for her too. School was easy for both of my sisters.
Mm-hmm. So that must have been really frustrating too.
Yeah.
But I think that you must. How do you like? I mean, I think that the life that you've created for yourself is pretty remarkable. Do you feel like that? There's all this patheticness, but when you really stop and think about it,
When I made that decision,
he's not really that pathetic. Kramer is not pathetic.
No, when I made that decision years ago that I was going, you know, I wanted to do what I wanted to do with my life. I've never looked back from that. You know, I loved being an artist. I loved everything. The only thing about it is, you know, the idea that like the middle class kind of aspirational thing is the only missing link to the thing.
Right. But also, like, I think if you hadn't, I mean, what's really interesting too is that you really stood up to your dad. You knew what you wanted and you know, you were your own person. And I think in a way, he must have taught you that too. And that is a pretty fucking awesome quality that will get you through anything, right?
Yeah. I mean, ironically, it took me to be like a junior in college to finally have the medal to do that.
So that's pretty cool. I think a lot of people would not be able to do that.
Up until that point, I was very passive about the whole thing. Because I didn't think that my father was unhappy. He seemed happy. I thought that his life seemed good for him. It just wasn't good for me.
A lot of it seems about materialism, too. Did your parents have a lot of material goods? Or is that part of it? Or am I reading
well,
into that?
Well, I mean, like in the show, to get back to the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the show, like there is sort of this, I built this sort of faux stone wall and this kind of fake pool table. You know, like it's, they're not fake, it functions. But, you know, like I built the trappings of like what, you know, the kind of things that I had, my friends had, people had in Westchester when I was growing up.
Right.
In New Rochelle, you know, it was like the middle class suburbs. It was a time when people could live pretty well on a middle class kind of salary.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, I'm not that obsessed with material things.
You're not, no.
But I'm obsessed with the idea that, like, you know, I need to get a job, like, next week. Otherwise, I'm not going to be able to pay my rent, you know, on my studio. That I'm obsessed with.
Right. Practical things. But do you find like
little
a lot
like
of,
that.
But it's funny. So like, because, so you see a lot of, I'm guessing you see a lot of hypocrisy in like how people, it's kind of a suburban hypocrisy, like that a lot of people see or people from art.
I mean, I have friends who, you know, I do have friends of mine who went into their father's businesses and those friends of mine have not suffered any economic, they have very different lives than me, you know. I mean, I've seen people make livings, good livings, but you know, I don't really I don't feel like that is the thing that is part of the character that I have created.
Right.
It's this character that is like really is totally aspirational beyond my aspirations. I'm pretty content with what. You know.
I get that feeling. Yeah, but I mean, it's really funny. It's human nature, isn't it? It's like if you're, like, say you go to, like, you're in some kind of festival or some kind of art fair. There's always, like, a better party or a better, and I've read things where, you know, like, you know, really high level people feel the same way. Like, there's always a better party than the party you're at. I mean, that's a cliche, really.
Everybody always wants, you know, it's like the idea is like if you ever, this is a funny thing. Like, I feel like if you ever do get successful, you're always going to be wanting to be more successful.
Exactly.
So you're never content.
I agree.
That's the opposite of the American dream. That's the other reality of American society. We all expect that we should live this dream, but this dream is insatiable.
Totally. So. But yeah, totally. And then like
that's why we all want a big gold apartment like Donald Trump.
I know. It's so funny.
I think that's why people who have nothing vote for guys like that.
Because they think that
they think that might bring them a step closer to getting it.
Yeah, I think you're right.
It's a total hypocrisy.
And they actually get to be in the room with him. They probably fantasize they're going to meet him like they're at a rock concert. They're going to get on stage with, you know, Axl Rose or something.
Axl Rose, exactly.
Let's talk about how you feel about, like, the opening tomorrow. Do you want to talk about that? Have you thought about that? Is that a good thing to talk about, or is that just going to make you more... Are you anxious or thinking about it? Should we talk about that? Is there a topic you would like to talk about?
Well, you know, the opening is going to be a lot of fun, but the funny part is that the rooms that I outfitted with my work are on the top floor of the gallery, and... It's a small kind of funny, you know, old school tenement style kind of, not even tenement style. It's just this funky old building. I don't know how much I'm going to stand around in the room with the work. Because it's on the top floor, they have a little backyard. I'll probably be out there.
Oh, they have a backyard. Extra bonus, folks. I'm glad I asked.
Drinking beer and smoking cigarettes. You know?
That's probably what you're going to do. Yes.
Yeah, probably.
So if we don't see you in there.
Find me in the backyard.
Yeah. You'll be in the backyard.
So this is like the perfect scenario for an art show. You know, I don't have to stand in the room with my work even.
Oh.
Yeah.
So do you think you'll be making any more hook rugs or anything? Like, you seem to really like it. That's kind of a funny thing, isn't it?
It's a funny thing. I really have to digest this moment here because, I kind of threw myself... Literally into this, I threw myself into this project, and the project, I just followed like one thing after another.
Right.
And all of a sudden I had like a bunch of these rugs that I had made over the course of basically the summer, mm-hmm. a few months. Like, and now I'm kind of like not sure if this is what I want to roll mm-hmm. with. And it's part of me that has like another video idea to continue with this Dave character.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, I could see that too.
But then I also kind of think, like, why don't I just sort of... I'm talking to someone about doing an installation project again mm-hmm. in March. And mm-hmm. I'm kind of thinking, hopefully I can kind of ride this wave of following one thing after another mm-hmm. and see where that takes me by March, mm-hmm. another four mm-hmm. months. So.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I also, you know, I was also thinking it might be good to talk about your relationship with the gallerist and how helpful that can be because you talked, you know, like I said, I've known you throughout the process and you did work with Bart a lot, the gallerist.
It was interesting because...
I think it's a good example. I just want to put it out there. And you tell me, but I think it's a good example for all us art people how having somebody like a gallerist or a curator or even just, you know, somebody besides you who has more of a work relationship, not so much a personal relationship, can really help your work and help you grow. And I think that happened there. Do you with Bart?
Well, it was an interesting thing because, you know, I knew his gallery just vaguely. They moved to this new building. There's the building they're in December. I liked this physical building. I went in there. I liked the shows. And at some point, he and I struck up a conversation about something. And they have on the second floor of the gallery, they show a lot of one-of-a-kind things like furnishings
cool,
or
funny
lamps.
Stuff. Yeah.
Or now they have some children's toys
that
were
awesome.
Made by artists. Anyway, this month. Or
original.
This,
very original. Very, original. Like, amazing
so
stuff.
So because I had made these aspects of installations, I got into this conversation with him about lamps and about things that I've made, but not really even trying to push it. I was just talking to him about how unusual it was, because the only place I'd ever seen anyone kind of trying to show this kind of, like, these kind of projects was at, like, Moss, which was an old store that was
Oh,
in
yeah,
Soho.
You showed stuff there? That's
No,
great.
I never showed stuff
Oh, but
at
you were
Moss.
Thinking
but,
about,
like, people
that
who made,
example,
like, one of a
right.
kind or limited, right. limited editions right. of certain things. And I started talking about that, and he said, well, why don't you, you know, send me some images of your lamps and chairs, and I'd be interested in, you know, talking to you about it. I sent him some images. Really, people say all the time, why don't you send me some stuff? And you do, and then they never write you back. But he corresponded with me with an email. We told me he liked them. And then he said, how about we do a studio visit? He came over. I had a bunch of furniture. We started talking about paintings. And then a week later, they had an opening, and I was over there at an opening. And he said, let me come back. I want to show you something. And a couple days later, I went up to the top floor, and he said, how about doing a project? It was very fast.
Well, it was very it fell together in a very natural, organic way.
It turned out, knew my work.
Right.
You know, I mean, I didn't know if he knew who I was when I was standing there talking to him upstairs, but he knew my work quite well.
Well, it fits in perfectly with what I've seen there.
And
so the
funny thing is, like I said before, like when we first started talking about this project, I was like in the back of my mind, even when I showed him the paintings in my studio, in the back of my mind, I was like, this is what I'm doing right now, but I'm not really sure about what I'm doing.
You mentioned something that you had.
And he seemed very patient.
Yeah.
He didn't care. You know,
he seemed to just believe in the work or your aesthetic or what you were doing.
Yeah, he was into it.
But you also, we had a little chat yesterday about, you had a nice chat or a helpful, he said helpful things after you showed him the video, or it kind of was a turning point for you or something. Do you want to tell
us? That was the other funny thing was, like, you know, he and I started talking about this project. So then I sort of pitched him. I said, well, let me, you know, I pitched him sort of like what I was thinking. And what I was thinking was a much more kind of like aspirational kind of room. Like it was going to be like this sort of like the pied a terre, like the sort of kind of nice in a way. And then he went to Europe because he's from Europe. He spent most of the summer, August away. I didn't talk to him for a long time about what I was doing. But at some point, before he went away, I started showing him these hook rugs. I showed him a tiger skin. He was into it. He thought it was pretty wild. He thought the hook rug thing was really great. And he kind of said, like, he was talking to me about my shows, and he said something about, like, oh, you're going to make a video, right? Because he had seen some of my videos. And that I was like, yeah, of course I'm going to make a video.
So it kind of, but
so
see,
that
that's the organic nature. But when he came back from Europe, two months
had passed since a visit, since any real concrete conversation. All of a sudden I had this whole other show with a video and all this other stuff. And all the, it sort of went from being this aspirational thing to this loser's like man cave. And instead of a pied a terre, it's a man cave on the third floor. But what happened was he actually wrapped his head around it right away. And yeah, we talked about the project as it was in front of us, not what it could have been or should have been or what we had. We talked about what I was doing. And so that was where it was really helpful, because he completely was involved in the work, in the moment of what I was doing. And, I had this idea about building this big round kind of Hefner bed, Hugh Hefner kind of round bed, and doing something with it. And with Bart and, you know, and he and I talking about it, the bed went to being this sort of like, there's a bed in the show, but it's more like a cot.
It's really funny. With the bedspread.
It's pretty
tiger
sad.
Bedspread.
You know, like it's the opposite of the round bed. It's the exact opposite. It's like a futon on the floor kind of thing. And, that was really a great, that was where his real, I got out of my own head and talked to somebody who was, didn't have an agenda, but went with it. So that's why.
Was encouraging, but not encouraging to encourage you, just by the fact that he got your work.
I mean,
was
most
encouraging.
Art dealers at some point or another, you know, are going to sit there and if they want to, they like talk about the work that they know that you've done, and they think they can sell it, or there was none of that kind of conversation.
Yeah, I don't get
about,
any
like,
of that. Yeah,
there was none of that. Like,
it was really about the work. It wasn't about the marketing. Sales aspect. It was really.
There was another little interesting thing about him. Just to tell you,
we have 5 minutes
all
left.
Right, but he had a summer show. That I was in, and it was a Works on Paper show, and I've shown in New York tons of works on paper, sold a lot of work. You know, I have a whole sort of thing. And I'd also built furniture that had this, like, sort of weird cardboard bark. They looked like logs. And he was like, let's show the logs. I don't want to show your drawings. Everybody knows what your drawings look like. Let's show the logs with the bark on it. That'll be a part of your piece in the Works and Paper show. And I thought that was a much more interesting, sort of generous way of dealing with me, with my work, than I had expected. So that was what, that was really a positive.
Another, yeah. So I just think it's really a great point to note that, like, how, like, we all look, like, how it's always good to get other input. I mean, it's great, yeah, if it's the gallerist. That's a sort of ideal, but it's not
always common. That I've had some great dealers I've worked with, and I've worked with some nightmares. I mean,
and you can work with a great dealer that won't necessarily get involved or forward your work or do any of that.
But it's
nice when that happens, and I think that really happened here, and I think that's why the show is going to be really special. I do.
Well, that's nice.
So, you know what? We have 4 minutes left, so I want to go, like, through the details again, so how do you think this went, David? I want to know you're on the air. What do you think? Are you going to be nervous about... See, this is what I said to David in the beginning. I know how... This is what I imagine he's going to do. He's going... Like, when this is over, he's going to be going, I didn't talk about that. I should have said that.
I can't believe I talked about my father.
Was that too much? I brought that up?
My son's going to be so embarrassed.
Your son. Yeah, we're promoting a show. We're promoting the Gotham Comedy Club.
Right, Kids and Comedy.
Kids and Comedy, Sunday, 1 o'clock, Gotham Comedy Club. I'll be there. So what do you think, David? Is there anything like you were like, oh, I shouldn't have said that, or I wish I'd said that? Are you thinking that, you think you're going to be nervous later, or you think you're going to be chill with this?
No,
what do you think?
It'll be.
You think it's good?
I'll listen to it in a week.
And then you'll decide.
And then I'll probably wish that I.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
It was great. Thank you.
No, it's fun
to be on the show.
It is.
It's fun.
I know. It got a lot heavier than I expected, didn't it?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
All right. That's okay. That's okay, though, right?
Yeah. It was like a therapy session.
Oh, man.
I feel much better now.
Do you feel better?
Yeah.
No. Really?
Well, yeah.
Okay. I hope I didn't upset you.
You know, it's interesting, though. That little story about my father, though, just one thing, is that he really did die on Election Day, and that is always, this time of year, is always
bizarre.
Weird.
He died on Election Day?
It was an off election. It was a midterm election.
There's a lot, it's an unusual day. There's always a vibe in the air, right?
Yeah.
So we have 2 minutes. Let's go through, like, where the show is and when it is and get through the details again, okay?
The show...
The name of the gallery.
The show is called Hooking Up with Dave. It's at LMAC Gallery, LMAK Gallery on Grand Street. I think I don't have the address. It's 298 Grand, I believe, between Eldridge and Allen. And the opening is on Friday night, October 21st, between 6 and 9.
Mm-hmm.
And
if they don't get to see it, then the show is open for 6 more weeks. And do you have the gallery hours?
The gallery's open Wednesday to Sunday, I believe, noon to 6 every day.
Okay.
And
Sunday's a great day to go to galleries.
Sunday's
isn't
the
it?
Best day to go in the Lower East Side.
Yeah, go down on Sunday.
That's the best.
Good.
And
it's a great date too, because it's like really cheap. It's free.
Yeah.
And then you get to like talk about the art. It's kind of very touchy feely topics.
The
and then you can tell your girlfriend the story about how the artist was almost crying on the air, and you know, show how sensitive you are as a guy. This could totally work for a lot of guys.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
You know,
it's worked for me. I mean,
obviously, obviously. Well, you know, I'm really excited about being at the opening, because after seeing the work and now talking to you more about it and seeing the gallerist and the whole thing behind the scenes, it'll be extra cool see everybody in the room and see the reaction too. So I feel like
I'm excited. It's a fun.
Get
it's
to
a
share
really,
in that a little bit. Yeah,
it's a really it is a kind of like one of those like meaningful shows that.
Yeah,
for me,
I get that. Yeah. So I'll tell you about it next week, folks. Dr. Lisa gives a shit. Dr. Lisa gives a shit. Dr. Lisa gives a shit about